This is VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Bowman. Russian police detained around 150 people at a meeting of independent and opposition politicians in Moscow on Saturday, accusing them of links to an undesirable organization. This is according to both a monitoring group and a TV station. The detentions come amid a crackdown on anti-Kremlin sentiment following the arrest and imprisonment of opposition politician Alexei Navalny, who returned to Russia in January after recovering from a nerve agent poisoning in Siberia. At least six protesters were killed by security forces in Myanmar, witnesses and media reported, as activists marked the death anniversary on Saturday of a student whose killing in 1988 sparked an uprising against the military government. Three people were killed and several injured when police opened fire on a sit-in protest in Mandalay, which is Myanmar's second biggest city, two witnesses told the Reuters. Another person was killed in a central town and two died by police fire in the commercial capital Yangon overnight, domestic media reported. German health experts warned on Saturday against any further easing of coronavirus lockdown measures as the number of cases jumped again due to the spread of the more infectious variant first detected in Britain. And Sri Lanka will ban the wearing of the burqa and shut more than 1,000 Islamic schools down, a government minister said on Saturday. The latest actions affecting the country's minority Muslim population. The Minister for Public Security told reporters he had signed a paper on Friday for cabinet approval to ban the full face covering worn by some Muslim women on national security grounds. This is VOA News. Ethiopia on Saturday rejected U.S. allegations there has been ethnic cleansing in Tigray, pushing back against the latest criticism of its military operation in its northern region by the new administration in Washington. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Wednesday he wanted to see Eritrean forces and those from the Amhara region replaced in Tigray by security forces that will respect human rights and not commit acts of ethnic cleansing. Nine more students than originally thought are missing after gunmen stormed a forestry college in northwest Nigeria earlier this week. A government official in Nigeria's Kaduna state said on Saturday, the revision brings the total number of missing students to 39 following Thursday's nighttime raid on the Federal College of Forestry Mechanization, the fourth mass school abduction in northern Nigeria since December. Foreign ministers in the G7 group of nations, including the United States and Britain, have expressed grave concerns at what they said was China's decision to fundamentally erode democratic elements of the electoral system in Hong Kong. The G7 released a statement that was tweeted by British Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab, saying the recent decision to change Hong Kong's electoral system indicated that authorities in China were determined to eliminate dissenting voices and opinions in Hong Kong. A London police officer appeared in court on Saturday for the first time after being charged with murder in a case that has caused widespread concern in Britain about women's safety. Wayne Cousins is charged with the kidnap and murder of 33-year-old Sarah Everin, who disappeared on the night of March 3rd while walking home in South London after visiting a friend. Ireland's Foreign Minister Simon Coveney said on Saturday that Britain was demonstrating perverse nationalism by seeking to reach a trade deal with the United States before the European Union and questioned whether it was a trustworthy partner. He said in a newspaper interview that the idea that Britain can get there first is narrow-minded thinking. It's perverse nationalism when actually Britain and the EU should work together as partners. A military aircraft flying from the Kazakh capital Nur-Sultan crashed while landing in Almaty on Saturday, killing four of six people on board, the emergency ministry for the Central Asian nation said. Russia's Interfax reported that the plane belonged to Kazakhstan's Border Guard Service. Via remote, Laurel Bowman, VOA News.
and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
See, the matter has refused to go away. According to the wishes of the All Progressives Congress, the members of our party in the parliament will not have a choice now than to come up with a motion to redemand the investigation of this fund.
Nigeria's opposition party demands an investigation into missing security funds.
No one is above the law. There is a reason why we have laws in the country. So if some people can be elevated above the law, the law doesn't make any sense.
Mauritania opposition figure rejects claims that graft charges against former President Abdelaziz are politically motivated.
Obviously, the COVID time, it's going to be the lockdown for all the people. Yeah, it's the call upon Congolese people, to be locked down on the day of the election. Election day.
And in the Congo Republic, an opposition party calls on prospective voters to boycott the upcoming March 21 presidential election. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Nigeria, lawmakers from the People's Democratic Party, or PDP, plan to move a motion to demand the formation of a committee to investigate missing funds. The money has been earmarked for the purchase of weapons needed to improve security. Local media reports say about $1 billion were allocated for the purchase. The funds were allocated to former security service chiefs to help address what many Nigerians say is the sharp increase in kidnappings and attacks blamed on militant groups, bandits and Fulani herdsmen. The service chiefs were replaced in January. PDP spokesperson Kola Ologbodiyan says an investigation would find and hold accountable those responsible for the missing funds. His remark come after National Security Advisor Babagana Monguno stated that funds given to the former service chiefs are missing. He, however, says President Muhammadu Buhari will investigate the circumstances behind the disappearance of the money. PDP spokesperson Kola Ologbodiyan says it is the duty of legislators to form a committee to get to the bottom of the controversy. He tells me that it is unacceptable for officials to do nothing about the missing funds, especially as Nigeria struggles with serious insecurity challenges.
Well, the reaction of the People's Democratic Party to the issue of missing $1 billion released from the SS crude account, and expectedly to be spent by the military in the purchase of arms is not strange. What is strange is a refusal of the National Assembly to investigate this allegation and give the outcome to Nigerians. Even before the then service chiefs were relieved of their responsibilities, the NSA, General Monguno, has consistently declared that this fund is missing and nothing has been said. Our party, the People's Democratic Party, has consistently demanded that the National Assembly to raise an ad hoc committee to investigate where this fund is lying. Until date, since July 2019, nothing, absolutely nothing, has been done. It's been swept under the carpet.
General Monguno is of the view that the president will surely probe this matter, to quote him. And Nigerian Governors Forum, they're also questioning the whereabouts of the so-called missing funds. What do you make of these statements?
Well, what the New Democratic Party will make of the statement is like it is one of the usual jokes of President Muhammadu Buhari's administration as well as the All Progressives Congress as a party. Because there is no promise that has been made either by the All Progressives Congress on behalf of President Muhammadu Buhari or by President Muhammadu Buhari himself that has been fulfilled. Nothing has been fulfilled by this administration. In the local parlance here, APC is believed to be an acronym of All Promises Cancelled. If Mr. President came out and said that, oh, the presidency will investigate, it is the duty of the National Assembly, who is constitutionally empowered in Section 88 and 89, to invite anyone for questioning where the fund of state is involved. If the National Assembly fails in this responsibility, is it the presidency that will account?
But Kola, some people are of the view that the monies cannot be said to have been diverted by the former service chiefs. However, some are also saying that the new ones who were replaced them should try to find out what happened to the fund. If you say the National Assembly appear not to be interested in probing or investigating this to provide answers that your party and other civil society organizations, as well as some Nigerians, have been asking, what are your thoughts?
You recall that in the beginning of this session, I did say that the matter had been on since July 2019. Already, we are in March 2021. So we are netting 2 years in which allegations have been in public space and government has done absolutely nothing to investigate. And the parliament that is charged constitutionally to take up its responsibility has failed to do so. However, the position of the People's Democratic Party is that we will not keep quiet, we will not allow such a humongous sum to be declared missing in a country where poverty, hunger, strains of inability to perform responsibility in the family economically is a daily occurrence. And just a few individuals will take away $1 billion and only come to tell Nigerians that they cannot trace their money. This fund will be traced.
So, Kola, some people also want to find out what PDP members of the National Assembly are doing to demand the formation of a committee to investigate this matter. What do you say to those critics?
Since the matter has refused to go away, according to the wishes of the All Progressives Congress, the members of our party in the parliament will not have a choice now than to come up with a motion to redemand the investigation of this fund.
Kola Ologbodiyan is the spokesperson for the Nigerian main opposition PDP. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. Mauritania, a leading opposition figure, is dismissing claims that graft charges against former President Mohamed Ould Abdelaziz are politically motivated. Bakary Tandian also says it is regrettable that supporters of the former president back his claims of immunity against prosecution as a former leader of Mauritania. His comments come after former President Abdelaziz was charged with corruption, money laundering, and acquired wealth that he has been unable to explain. The former president sharply denies the charges, saying they are politically motivated. He argues that the constitution grants him immunity from prosecution as a former president. Meanwhile, some former public officials who served after former President Abdelaziz have also been charged with graft. Opposition figure Bakary Tandian tells me that prosecutors should also go after all former public officials who have committed proven acts of financial malfeasance.
For me, as a Mauritanian, it is not a surprise at all, and it wouldn't be a surprise for any Mauritanian because his behavior is well known, and this situation was expected. Otherwise, it would have been a big, a disappointment. In terms of his behavior, he has been abusing the state, resources. He did it in public display. He did it with defiance. He did it to show that he is, the man in charge. He is powerful. He is above, the law. So he must be held accountable, and anybody who has played any role, in this crime.
But some people are suggesting that the charges against him are politically motivated. What do you say to that?
This is a cheap argument. Whenever, a politician is caught in a wrongdoing, in a crime, the easiest way to defend him is to refer to political motivation. what he has done, there is no need for investigation for this. You don't even need an expert or a prosecutor, you know, to find out about his situation. He did it in public. I will give you an example. You know, the police academy in Nouakchott, you can go today. He took part of the school to build shops. Another example, the main stadium of Nouakchott, Stade Olympique, the parking space front of the stadium, he used it to build a hotel. You know, the list is too long, and he has been doing it with his family, with his entourage. So impunity cannot continue. He must be held accountable for his wrongdoings.
But some people are saying the government of the day is using the powers of the administration as a method of witch hunt because they disagree with him politically. That is why they are carrying out what his supporters are saying is a clear case of a witch hunt.
Really, I totally disagree with that. The investigation was started by the parliament, including members who were elected when he was in power, meaning that who most likely were in favor, in his favor. So the evidences are strong, are clear, are convincing. The burden is on him to explain how he got his wild wealth. Very simple.
Some people are of the opinion that if former leaders will be treated like this, then future leaders of Mauritania will not want to leave because they would not want to suffer the same fate or treatment being meted out to former President Abdelaziz. What is your reaction to that statement?
To that statement, my position is that people should not reward individuals, whether they are president or cabinet members, when they are engaged in criminal behavior. If you don't want to be in trouble, behave yourself in a correct manner. If you engage in criminal activity, if you misuse the state resources, you have to be held accountable. This is, people should not encourage impunity. No one is above the law. There is a reason why we have laws in the country. So if some people can be elevated above the law, then, the law doesn't make any sense.
Bakary Tandiyan is a leading opposition figure in Mauritania. He spoke with me from New York. Republic, the opposition United for the Congo, or UPC, is calling on supporters and other registered voters to boycott the upcoming March 21 presidential election. The party says the vote is unlikely to be transparent and credible. It argues that officials of the Electoral Commission are biased in favor of President Denis Sassou Nguesso. Supporters of the president dismiss the accusation as without merit. They accuse the opposition party of embarking on misinformation and wild allegations to tarnish the reputation of the president. They also say the opposition's presidential candidate fails to meet official requirements to run for office, an issue that they say is the reason behind the accusations. The UPS's call for the boycott of the vote comes after presidential candidates intensified their campaigns in the run-up to the vote. René Mavungu Pambu is the coordinator of the United for the Congo UPC party in the United Kingdom. He tells me that the presidential poll will not be credible, despite what he says are fake promises from the Electoral Commission to ensure a transparent election.
He came in power by a coup, and every election is stealing. That's why we cannot participate in this coming election. What we know are sure that other opponents, the so-called opponents, they are going just to be what you call in French, it's a kind of people. We are playing, we are working for the main party in a power. Do you listen, sir?
Why is your party not supporting any other opposition party in the election?
The issue, as I said, you know, the other opponent party, yeah, who are taking part in this election as the so-called party, so-called opponents. We can't back them. We can't back them. And we can't back the main party in power ever.
Why? Why?
Why? Because we, as UPC, we are working for our people. We are working for the freedom of our country, the freedom of our people. And we can't be part of this election because it's a fake one.
You have Congolese people who have registered, who are ready to go and vote to choose their new president. Critics are saying you are just making noise because your candidate failed to qualify. And that is why you are bitter by saying the elections will be rigged. The elections, they say, will be free, fair, and transparent.
No, sir. It's not a free and transparent. Let me tell you something. This election, it's mainly organized by the party, the power. The so-called opponents are not part in the organization of this election. We see, and the electoral list, I'm not revised. Yeah, it's an old one. They didn't revise that electoral list. It's a fake. It's a fake, sir. Yeah.
Now that you are boycotting the election, what impact do you think this will have on the election? Because the election is going to proceed, whether you are part of it or not.
This election is a non-event, and we are calling Congress people to stay at home on March 21st, 2021. They have to stay at home. There is not the interest to go and vote. What we are planning is just the lockdown, yeah? As it is the COVID time, it's going to be the lockdown for all the people, yeah? It's a call upon Congolese people, yeah, to be locked down on the day of election day.
René Mavungu Pambu is the coordinator of the United for the Congo UPC Party in the United Kingdom. He spoke with me from London. In Kenya, the African Institute for Development, or AFIDEP, has launched an advocacy tool called the Health Tech Platform. Representatives from the organization say it is an African-driven platform that will promote informed discussions about the design, development, and use of transformative technologies. These new innovations aim to address major health challenges in sub-Saharan Africa. They also say the platform will allow scientists, policymakers, academics, civil society groups, and other stakeholders to work together to resolve health challenges. Dr. Ali Azulu is the executive director of AFIDEP. He says African governments should close the gaps in current regulations to encourage the development of emerging transformative technologies. He says this will enable the widespread use of new tools that have been tested and proving to be safe and effective. Zulu tells me that he is confident these technologies can address what he describes as Africa's high disease burden.
The primary objective of the platform really is to provide a mechanism that will allow African experts, African scholars, but also policymakers to really interrogate and get to understand, to discuss the transformative health technologies so that they can input into their rollout as well as in some cases in their development with the ultimate aim that if any of these transformative technologies, we are really looking at technologies like genetically modified mosquitoes, artificial intelligence, drones, and so on. These are technologies that are very different from the typical medicine that already has guidelines that governments follow. When a new form of medicine comes, there are already institutions that review them too. So the aim of this platform is really to make sure that we allow African experts, scholars, development practitioners, civil society organizations, and policymakers to really look at the evidence behind these technologies, to really look at how they are built to work out, and then start exploring ways in which, if they are proven to be safe and effective, ways in which we can actually use them at scale.
Now, I'm sure you are keenly aware of the factors that impede efforts to develop and promote the use of transformative technologies on the continent. How can these issues be resolved using the health tech platform?
Yeah, so we believe that a big part of this is that there isn't good awareness of the technologies, the intention, and the fact is that a lot of these technologies are developed from the global north, and they're just, you know, imposed on Africa, and people are just seeing the tail end or seeing the final product, that it's going to be hard to actually make sure that those that work, those that are safe, can be used at scale to change people's lives. So these are the problems we want to actually address by making sure that they are objective, very, very clear, transparent discussions about these technologies on the continent, that African experts, who some of them have already been suspicious, they can be given an opportunity to put their voices on the table. And then those who really see that these technologies are going to help the continent in addressing various health problems and so on, then they become champions. Because right now the problem is a lot of these technologies are really developed and driven by actors from the north.
Talking about public policies and regulatory frameworks, basically the government put in place some of these regulatory frameworks and policies. How do you intend engaging them to have this infrastructure, perhaps, and the regulatory frameworks as well as the policies? Because without that, the Africa Health Tech platform that you launched could face significant headwinds, don't you think?
So for us, what we plan to do on this is the platform will involve at first dealing with these experts, scientists, and so on, but also getting now to talk with governments, get governments, government officials to be part of the platform, to be part of the discussions. So you are not going to them at the end of the process and say, hey, there's this technology. We want them to be part and parcel of the engagements that we're going to do from the outset. And then we're also going to engage the governments and see, are those governments, we know the level of interest for different governments will be different. And so for the governments that are keen to move forward first, we'll support them first, we'll work with them.
Looking at the Africa Tech platform recently launched, what do you think are the prospects of it, and how do you think you can engage these governments to embrace it, you know, looking forward?
I think the prospects are really huge. I think we think that this platform is going to actually, at the end of it, if there's an initial startup period for the project, that there will be increased understanding, commitment, and action by policymakers to facilitate the development and use of transformative technologies for tackling health challenges. So one is just increased understanding. Second, we think that as people understand these technologies better, there will be increased voices and engagement of African scientists, the media, development experts, and civil society organizations in discourses to promote not only the development, but also the use of the transformative technologies. And finally, we believe that the strengthened advocacy capacity of African experts and institutions will be enhanced as well.
Dr. Ali Azulu is the executive director of AFIDEP. He spoke with me from the Rwandan capital, Kigali. are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the White House is calling for a full independent investigation into human rights abuses in the conflict in Ethiopia's Tigray region. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sane reports on the ongoing violence in Tigray that has left 3 million people in need of food assistance.
In Ethiopia's mountainous Tigray region, federal troops have been fighting forces of the region's former ruling party, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, in the north since last November. Thousands of people have been internally displaced, sought refuge in neighboring countries, and killed. A recent Amnesty International report concluded that Eritrean soldiers killed hundreds of civilians in Ethiopia's ancient town of Aksum in November in what the rights group called a massacre. Another rights group, Human Rights Watch, later corroborated the mass killings of civilians with additional reporting and research. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki told VOA the United States wants a full and independent investigation into human rights abuses in the Tigray region. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
So the president is deeply concerned, highly engaged on this issue.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken told a congressional panel Wednesday the situation in Tigray is unacceptable and must change. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
We have, as you know, forces from Eritrea that are there, and we have forces from an adjoining region, Amhara, that are there. They need to come out, and a force that will not abuse the human rights of the people of Tigray or commit acts of ethnic cleansing, which we've seen in western Tigray, that has to stop.
The United Nations says 3 million Tigrayans are now dependent on food assistance because the conflict interrupted the harvest. Rights groups say humanitarian access to rural parts of the Tigray region has been limited. But the Ethiopian government argues that access is a sovereignty and a security issue, and UN teams are not free to go wherever they please. Ethiopian government spokesman Redwan Hussein.
This country is not no man's land. It has a government. It only has difficulty in the north. So they were told in some of areas they were not supposed to move. But they indulged themselves to kind of adventurous expedition.
The U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, said the hunger crisis is man-made, adding she used that gender designation deliberately. The U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., Linda Thomas-Greenfield.
We call on all sides, and I stress all sides, to stop the fighting and allow this man-made humanitarian situation to be addressed.
Secretary Blinken said Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed was an inspiring leader who was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. But now he needs to step up to make sure his own people who are suffering are getting the protection they need and deserve. Cindy Sane, VOA News, Washington.
Says it is holding talks with Egypt in a bid to resolve diplomatic ties that have been frozen since the 2013 military coup that ousted Egypt's President Mohamed Morsi. As Dorian Jones reports for VOA from Istanbul, improving relations between the two regional powers could have repercussions across North Africa.
Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Çavuşoğlu announced high-level intelligence and diplomatic talks with Egypt Friday. The bilateral talks are the first since the 2013 ousting of Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi. Hüseyin Barca of Turkey's Foreign Policy Institute says Ankara is seeking to counter its growing isolation.
There is an increasing block, increasing antipathy towards Turkey. Turkey cannot go like this. Israel, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates. I mean, it is too much.
Last year, Cairo further turned up the pressure on Ankara, signing a deal with Athens to explore for energy in Mediterranean waters contested by Greece and Turkey. But regional analyst Sinan Ülgen says conciliatory Turkish words towards Egypt are not enough for a diplomatic breakthrough.
We've seen this opening towards Egypt and so on. But ultimately, whether this new turn is going to be effective and deliver results does hinge on what Turkey does.
Ankara's support of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, or as it's called in Arabic, Ikhwan, which was ousted from power in 2013 by the current president, Fatih El-Sisi, remains a key point of tension between the countries, says regional analyst Cem Gudeniz.
Egypt right now is acting against Turkey just because of Turkish government's wrong policy based on the theological background, like Ikhwan policy. If the Turkish government leaves that the religion-based foreign policy, I'm sure that the relationship with Turkey and Egypt will be better.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan was a close ally of the ousted Egyptian leader Morsi and publicly wept over the Sisi-led crackdown on Morsi's Muslim Brotherhood supporters. Analyst Baja says Erdogan will have to make painful concessions.
Tayyip Erdogan and Sisi, probably they will not shake the hands as presidents in the foreseeable future. But Turkey is not supporting Muslim Brothers so openly as before.
With Egypt and Turkey backing rival sides in the recent Libyan civil war and competing for influence in Sudan, analysts say Turkish-Egyptian rapprochement could ease regional tensions. But difficult diplomatic talks are predicted, given the recent animosity and distrust between them. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Human rights experts warn South Sudan's people are experiencing the worst violence since civil war broke out in December 2013. The UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan says people are most at risk in central Equatoria, Jonglei, Waraf State, and the Greater Pibor Administrative Area. The report has been submitted to the UN Human Rights Council. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
South Sudanese civilians are caught in the perfect storm of ongoing suffering and misery. The UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan reports the country's humanitarian crisis is being exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic and floods, as well as the highest levels of food insecurity and malnutrition in a decade. This on top of escalating violence and rampant human rights violations. Commission Chair Yasmin Suka says in one of the regions most at risk, Jonglei and the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, nearly 2 million people are kept in thrall by tens of thousands of well-armed fighters. She says boys are abducted and forced to fight. She says militia groups have razed entire villages and murdered and forcibly displaced thousands of civilians.
All of the warring groups target women and girls, using them as chattels and treating them as the spoils of war. Last year, hundreds of women and girls were abducted, they were raped and gang-raped, and sexually enslaved or forcibly married off.
Suka says crimes of a similar magnitude and horror are occurring throughout the country. She says the conflict in central Equatoria is driven by competition for territory and access to lucrative gold mines. She says competition over land and cattle is fueling the violence at the local community level. She notes hardly any of the provisions of the 2018 peace agreement have been implemented, despite the formation of the revitalized government in February of last year, nor have the hybrid court and Truth and Reconciliation Commission been established. She says the lack of accountability for gross human rights violations entrenches impunity, builds resentment, and deepens ethnic divisions and violence.
The Commission therefore urges the government, as a sign of good faith, to sign without further delay the Memorandum of Understanding with the African Union, which will pave the way for the hybrid court and the other transitional justice mechanisms to be established.
South Sudanese Minister of Justice and Constitutional Affairs Ruben Madol Arroy does not deny the problems facing his country, but says the government has been putting measures in place to promote human rights. He downplays the extent of violence, saying the security situation is calm, despite some sporadic intercommunal clashes in parts of the country. The minister says a gender-based violence court has been established and perpetrators have been convicted. Furthermore, he says a resolution has been signed to start the process of establishing 3 transitional justice institutions. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
You want to be my lover. Say your para, I repeat on your para. Oh, sing it to Allah. I don't want to tire. Oh, oh, to my mama. My mama to my papa. She says, sing it to Allah. So I go, so I come, so I do what you want. But don't fall in love with me. So I go, so I come, so I do what you want. But don't fall in love with me.
We are stand at attention. I'm talking to you, you are respond. Give me your curry mess, son. How can you be asking me a question? You know they look face so. It's like you don't know my name, no. Mufeka my date, though. Hey, you talk any boyfriend or late, though. Now me say so. See, I stand, I balance. Because I'm a chief lieutenant. You know, see my car, the German. You know, see the swag, gallant. See many, they claim my madame. But I don't know these babes from madame. They just want to follow the ladder. They know that nobody's badder. She say, why ain't it flex like Happy Jim? Make it a hope, they dare, they dream. Is he by force to be with him? Is this a military regime? I be such a man, I say stand at peace. Sorry, dollar, my feet by elite. It's only me, there's no confetti. I will make it rain like it's confetti. Show my body, show till love berry. I will take you and your baby. No mess up, now I holla. I'm a Hitler, I'm a Basha. You better respect how they run the town. Even Garebo, no fit turn me down. See weapon, where you call it? Come and be general in my army.
So jah go, so jah come, so jah do what you want, but don't. Soja, me I dey wonder, she is it by force, you dey form superpower.
Yeah, I'm super, I get power. Wagba paper, wafi shower. I get babes, the age of your mama. So just stop, this your drama.
See this man, I say your father.
Who ya repeat him?
Your father, oh, see me, see wala. I don't tie yawa, oh.
Oh yes, now yawa, where you enter? It's a one chance. I tell you no man, overthrow man from this romance. Only coup d'etat.
So jah go, so jah come, so jah do what you want, but don't fall in love with me. So jah me I know they do, so jah find another fool. Just don't fall in love with me. So jah me I know they do, so jah me I know they do. So don't you fall in love, only don't you fall in love.
Wow.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, Managing Editor Bill Eagle, reporter Douglas Impuga, and producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, one does not follow the footprints in the water. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.